Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A right-to-work state sees a nice bump in union membership. Striking coal miners in Alabama get some good news from the National Labor Relations Board. And today on the show, the Government Affairs Director for the AFL-CIO and the latest from the Better Business Bureau. Welcome to the Thursday, August 26th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. One of our regulars, longtime contributor, Mr. William Samuel. Bill Samuel is the Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation and a very, very close friend to the late, great Rich Trumka. It was 3 weeks ago today that Rich passed away from a massive heart attack. Well, I'll reflect on that and talk about the changes at the Labor Federation. Last Friday, Liz Shuler was officially declared as president. She'll keep that position until next June. Fred Redman, number two spot, taking Liz Shuler's secretary treasurer position. And Tafir Gebra stays as a vice president in number three. So we'll talk about the AFL-CIO. We'll talk about infrastructure. We're moving on that. We have two bills. We have the bipartisan one, and then we have the reconciliation plan, which does not need any Republican support, and it will not get any Republican support. We'll touch on that. What about voting? We had the For the People Act. Now we have the John Lewis Act, because some Democrats weren't too happy with the For the People Act. Pro, protect the right to organize. Now declare the Richard Trumka Pro Act. Touch on that. And also the USMCA, which is NAFTA 2.0, and there was a significant ruling just about a week ago involving General Motors and their factory in Mexico, which had a strike and also a firing of a number of workers down there. And that's all going to be reconsidered as a result of the provisions in that new agreement. So certainly good news for workers. Sue McConnell will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the Better Business Bureau, BBB.org. And number one issue we're going to get into is charitable giving. There's a lot of tragedy going on in the world. You got the earthquake in Haiti. You got the situation in Afghanistan. And there's a lot of people trying to figure out, well, I want to help them, but is the money going to the right place? And if you go to the BBB website, this is really good what they did. It's called Charitable Giving After a Natural Disaster or Tragedy. And they run down 14 tips on what you need to consider. Starts off with thoughtful giving, crowdfunding. You've heard of that. How will donations be used? These are the things you need to ask. Giving money rather than goods. Donating money is the quickest way to help and provides charities the flexibility to channel their resources. Be wary of 100% claims. Watch out for claims that 100% of the donations will assist victims and their families. That's hardly ever the case. Identify celebrity fundraising plans. Just because a celeb is saying it's the right thing to do, that doesn't mean anything. Financial transparency. Let's see, respect for victims and their families. Tax deductibility. Not all organizations have that, like a 501c3 set up. So if you think you're getting a tax write-off, you may not be. So we'll cover all of that. Dent repair scammers. You get in a fender bender. Apparently, there's some scammers there. And also, a phony pet sitting job. There's a job scam right now. Say you're gone for maybe a couple of weeks, and you need somebody to watch your pet. Scammers are out there. BBB.org is a website. National Labor Relations Board regional official has found merit in labor law breaking complaints filed against Warrior Mets. That's the Alabama coal company and its hedge fund owners who have forced 1,100 miners to strike its mines. This started April 1. the officer filed a formal charge against the firm. Now, this means the decision of proof now shifts to the firm to show it did not commit unfair labor practices. The NLRB official had to act after warning Warrior Med bosses, this is on August 13th, that the agency would file the charges if the firm did not, quote, cease and desist its unlawful conduct against the workers in the union. Well, Warrior Met refused. So the NLRB followed through 5 days later. Cecil Roberts, president of the miners, expected the charge of bargaining in bad faith and refusing to provide the union with information it needed to bargain. The NLRB's website discloses other allegations against Warrior Met, like illegal discipline, illegal retaliation, and illegal firing of miners. Cecil said this is welcome news, but no great surprise. We've seen this company act in ways contrary to American labor law from the outset of this strike. We filed multiple unfair labor practice charges in addition to those related to not bargaining in good faith. He went on to say they have targeted our members and their families on the picket lines with vehicular assault and more. Now, the vehicular assault comment referred to two incidents involving an unidentified pro-management person deliberately swerving his truck in the Warrior Met parking lot to first threaten a peacefully picketing man and then later threaten a woman bringing food to the picketers. The intended victims were husband and wife. Robert said, "We will see where we go from here. We continue to call on the company to get serious about reaching an agreement that is fair and reasonable for both sides. And as we wait, we continue our unfair labor practice strike." Now, Warrior Met, egged on by Wall Street hedge fund financiers who bought it out of bankruptcy several years ago, forced the strike by reneging on their prior promise to make workers whole after they returned to profitability. For approximately $1.1 billion in pay, pension, and health care givebacks the workers made to help keep the company and its coal mines alive. And when they did that, the company said, "We need you to take these sacrifices. All right, take these sacrifices. And when we turn a profit, we'll talk and you'll get a lot of that money back." Well, none of that happened. The firm is now profitable, although they're claiming the strike left it with $7 million in losses in the second quarter of this year. And the union has twice held informational picketing of the hedge funds. Come on. Enough is enough. New study analyzed the effects on Michigan's workers turning to unions during the pandemic. And you know what? It revealed an increase in unionized workers, even despite the overall loss of jobs. Citing Bureau of Labor Statistics data, the article notes that 15.2% of Michigan's wage and salaried workers were unionized last year. That is up from 13.6% in 2019. That's pretty significant. Now, this contradicts the overall trend of declining union membership, though there are demographics and job sectors where this is not true. Young workers, for instance, have increasing unionization rates. I think you're seeing a lot of that, especially in journalism. We talked about this with John Schloss just about a week and a half ago. A lot of these publications are going union. And think about all the grocery stores where frontline workers no longer get hero pay, even though they're dealing with a lot of customers, don't wear masks, not vaccinated. They're calling for unions. The article cites new interest in unionizing in healthcare settings that helped offset losses in the tourism industry, which has a decent amount of unionized workers. And keep in mind, Michigan is a right-to-work state now. Yeah, that happened. Oh my gosh, probably about 7 or 8 years ago when their former governor, Rick Snyder, in the middle of the night decided to pass right-to-work, even though he said, "We don't need it." Hopefully they can turn that around. Well, you know the PRO Act will turn all of that around. All right, we have to break. Bill Samuel, the Government Affairs Department of the AFL-CIO, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org. I want to give a shout out here to Amanda Jarrett. We had her on the show for, I believe, about 4 months. Joyce Goldstein, our labor attorney, who analyzes a lot of decisions that come out of the National Labor Relations Board, was on special assignment, and she recommended Amanda, who comes from the Food and Commercial Workers Union. She was a legal counsel there. So she filled in for Joyce. And she told me that there was a good chance she might be going over to the labor board. Well, guess what? Last week, it was announced that Amanda Jarrett will serve as a board member for Gwynne Wilcox, the first black person on the labor board. And she'll be her chief counsel. So a nice little gig for Amanda Jarrett. We appreciate everything that she did for the show, and I'm sure she'll be a good asset for the National Labor Relations Board. And that's something we're going to talk about briefly with Bill Samuel, who is on line number one right now. Mr. Samuel, welcome back to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
This has been tough. Imagine, how long did you know Rich Trumka, who passed? It was 3 weeks ago today. How long ago were you friends?
He hired me to represent the United Mine Workers in Washington in 1984. So I sort of followed his lead, spent 10 years at the UMWA, took a brief detour to the Clinton administration with his support, and then came back to the AFL-CIO when he was there as Secretary Treasurer. So about 37 years, mostly on, but on and off, I guess.
Yeah, this has to be tough. It's tough for so many people. I didn't know him as well as you did, but I really, really enjoyed what he did since, 2009 that he took over the AFL-CIO.
Yeah. He had a real vision for the labor movement. I mean, he was not just there to collect a paycheck or see his name in the papers. He had a real strong moral core that, it infused everything he did about, to protect and strengthen the rights of workers. He came up the hard way, in a coal mining family in a coal town in southwest Pennsylvania, and it was his life's work, and he just never deviated from that. And the other thing I'll say is, he believed that you could get things done that other people didn't, and just sort of force of will. He was a very strong-willed individual. I'm sure that came across in his speeches if people saw him.
Yeah.
And he was, right far more often than wrong about what you could get done if you put your mind to it. So he's left a big hole at the AFL-CIO.
And hats off to what you did at the Labor Federation on the homepage, AFLCIO.org. There's a lot of tributes to Rich Trumka in video going back when he talked to the steelworkers. It was a steelworkers convention in 2008 when he had to go out and say, hey, it's okay to vote for a black guy for president. I mean,
right. Well, yeah, UMW had a long history of integration. Yeah. I mean, going back to the early part of the century. And in many ways, Rich was sort of a transitional figure at the AFL. You know, he's a white man who, in a long succession of white men at the Labor Federation and in most unions. But he really, cared a lot about immigrant rights, LGBTQ rights, certainly the rights of black and brown workers. He really kind of shifted the focus as the workforce changed. And he had, he had a very strong moral core, and he kind of moved the Federation into the 21st century. And I think now we're on the, we're one of the leading organizations for immigrant rights, for racial justice, for women's rights. And that's really a tribute to his vision.
Yeah. And he paved the way for Liz Shuler, when you think
about it. That's right. That's a perfect example, the first woman president of the Federation, young woman. I mean, she's barely 50, I think. And, I think it's going to be – she's definitely going to fill his shoes and his the mandate he left. And we're very excited about it, about her leadership.
Yeah. Excited about Fred Redmond, too. We had him on the show on Monday. I love Fred, and the Steelworkers, of course, are a sponsor of the show, so he's been one of the regulars there. But you know what? I didn't see that one coming. Did you know anything about that? What's the story?
I mean, it makes perfect sense because they serve together on the AFL-CIO Racial Justice Task Force. Fred's the chair or co-chair, and Liz was very involved. They probably met on and off, as many times a week for at least a year. They worked together on the police reform blueprint, to get union members more involved in police reform, especially unionized cops. So they were quite close, and so it makes perfect sense. And he's a great addition to the leadership team.
And I heard a couple of days ago that it's going to be called, the PRO Act is going to be called the Richard Trumka Protect the Right to Organize
Act. That's right. When the Senate comes back in about 2 weeks, they will reintroduce the bill, and it will be named the Richard L. Trumka Protecting the Right to Organize Act. So a nice tribute to Rich.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start right there. Where are we with this with the PRO Act? Because we need it. We need it. I just did a story about the miners down in Warrior Met. They got a good ruling from the NLRB, but I mean, yesterday we had the Teamsters on, and they're trying to organize, and they're very successful at it, too, XPO. But they were talking about all the anti-union campaigns going on. It's just a wicked company. But what's the latest with the
We're making progress. We have, I think, we've talked before, we've got almost every Democratic senator on as a co-sponsor, including some pretty, moderate to conservative Democrats in the Senate. So we've got 47 official co-sponsors. We've got two other Democrats who pledged in meetings with local labor leaders to vote for it. That's Mark Warner and Mark Kelly, Virginia and Arizona. So that's 49 votes if we can get a vote on it. We still need Kyrsten Sinema. She's kind of bedeviled Democrats across the country. She's taken some, positions that not everybody can quite figure out why. She's not with the Democrats on some things that she ought to be. I mean, she may come around. We're not sure. So we hope this will be the 50th vote. But we're working, on getting Alaska Senator Murkowski. I think there's a possibility we'll get her. The real key is Senate rules. The rules make it almost impossible for the majority to lead in that body. You need 60 votes. That's a supermajority to get bills passed. But Senate Democrats are, talking seriously about changing those rules. And if they do, I think we could pass the PRO Act without much trouble. So we're working both on the PRO Act, on Senate rules, and also the budget reconciliation bill, which may include some labor law reform provisions. And of course, budget reconciliation can get through the Senate with only 50 votes. There are special rules covering budget legislation, and if we can get some of the PRO Act provisions in there, because they have an impact on the budget. Obviously, if people are making more money, or if we can collect more fines from companies, that those are budgetary, that has an impact on the budget, and we can get that in through the budget reconciliation opening, and that we can do that with 50 votes. So we're working on a couple different fronts at the same time.
So what I'm hearing then, if we change the rules in the game, labor wins. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely. The game is rigged. It has been for you know, ever really since the beginning of the 20th century, when conservative Southern senators used the filibuster to stop civil rights legislation from passing. And that's the history of the filibuster. It's not in the, there's no constitutional right to filibuster. It was invented by senators who wanted to stop civil rights legislation. It was then used probably a dozen times to stop labor reform in the late 1970, early to 1990, the early 2000s. So Democrats feel like, okay, this rule is getting in the way of doing the business that the people sent us here to do. A majority ought to be enough, 50 votes plus one in the Senate. And I think there's a serious discussion going on about revisiting that rule. And the president's talked about it. You know, Barack Obama has said it's a relic of the Jim Crow South. That's what he calls the filibuster. And yeah. He was a senator, you know, so he understands the implications of saying that. And so we're hopeful that maybe there'll be a change in that. But even so, we're going to keep plugging away until we get a majority.
So when is all this going to take place? I mean, you mentioned something about there's a recess going on. I know the House did some stuff. Well, what's the timetable on all this?
Yeah, there's a lot happening now for what's normally a very slow period in Washington. House came back this week for a couple of days, Monday and Tuesday, and they passed the budget reconciliation, the budget resolution, I'm sorry, that sets in motion the reconciliation bill that comes next. The budget sets the targets. The reconciliation bill is the actual legislation that implements it. So they'll come back in September and work on that. The Senate has also passed the budget resolution. They'll be back in September working on budget reconciliation, you know, putting the details together. That's where we hope to get some of these labor reform items included. The Senate will also take up democracy reform, voting rights, probably around September 12th, 13th. That may provoke a serious discussion about Senate rules because no Republican will vote for voting rights. It's a kind of a shocking development this year. The House passed the John Lewis Voting Rights Act on Tuesday. Not a single House Republican voted for it. In the past, dozens of Republicans voted for voting rights. They've moved so far to the right that they don't even support, at this point, you know, protecting the right to vote for African Americans, Latinos, et cetera. And so that bill will move over to the Senate in early September. And if the Republicans block it there, that's what may precipitate this debate about Senate rules, because they could pass the Voting Rights Act with 50 votes, with Vice President Harris breaking the tie, if they were allowed to. If the filibuster holds, they would need 60. They're not going to get 60.
Right.
There aren't 10 Republicans. There wasn't one in the House. So that's sort of what's – September's going to be a busy month. They're going to be dealing with voting rights, budget reconciliation as part of that, labor law reform. And then they got to get the overall budget passed by September 30th. The debt ceiling has to be increased. There's all kinds of things. And it's a short month because there's a couple of holidays in there. Rosh Hashanah, I believe, and Yom Kippur. So they're out for a few days in the middle of the month. They don't get back until, I think, the Senate comes in September 13th or 12th. The House doesn't come back in until the 20th of September, which gives them about 10 days to do all this. So it's going to be a very hectic time.
Well, there's a lot to unwind here, Bill. Let's get into the voting rights thing, because you mentioned the John Lewis Act, and then there was the For the People Act. I think that was H.R. 1 in the House.
Exactly.
Now these are somewhat different, aren't they?
Probably going to be merged in the Senate. The For the People Act deals mostly with protecting the vote for all Americans. Vote by mail, automatic registration, early vote, outlawing voter purges, you know, where they go through and they throw away, they clean up what they claim they're cleaning up the rolls, taking people off who haven't voted. Other things that have been used in Republican states to cut down on basically to make it harder to vote. So these are kind of voting procedures that are fixed in S1 or HR1. It also deals with redistricting, and it deals with money in politics. It sets up a program for public financing of federal races. So that's S1. That's For the People. HR4 is the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. That simply restores the 1965 Voting Rights Act as it was originally passed, to protect essentially minority voters from discrimination and from voting changes that would make it harder for African Americans to vote, which is what's going on across the country in red states. All that will be merged into one bill and will be taken up by the Senate around September 12th or 13th.
Let me ask you this. If they go forward and pass some legislation, is there a possibility that it'll be taken all the way to the Supreme Court?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt there'll be challenges to it. But it's been very carefully drafted. I think it will withstand those challenges. Now we have a new court, a Republican court, three members appointed by Donald Trump. But I think folks feel pretty confident that the court would stay away from invalidating a law of that magnitude, that importance, dealing with such a fundamental right, the right to vote.
Yeah.
So we're cautiously optimistic. Again, there's going to be a fight over Senate rules because Senate Republicans don't want to expand the franchise. They only win if they can restrict who votes. I mean, it's a sorry story, but in many places that's true. That's why they lost in Georgia. A huge turnout in Georgia. Record numbers of people voted, and they elected two Democratic senators. People thought it wasn't possible based on the number of people who had voted in past elections. But they expanded the franchise in Georgia. They made it easier to vote. More people came out, and that's why two Democrats got elected. And that's what the Republicans are pushing back on.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, Bill, hold that thought. I got to take a break here. Bill Samuels joining us on our live line. He's the Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation. For complete updates, just go to aflcio.org. We'll cover infrastructure next, get into some detail on that. Sue McConnell will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the Better Business Bureau. And yes, there's more scams to talk about. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyAndFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we're available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora when you get an opportunity. Just take a minute, sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. Five stars would be greatly appreciated. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin one of our regulars. Love talking to this guy, Bill Samuel. He is the Government Affairs Director for the Labor Federation, aflcio.org. All right, let's start with this infrastructure bill, the bipartisan legislation, which is over $1 trillion, and that's going to lead us into the budget reconciliation package, and I guess that's more infrastructure. But let's start with the bipartisan deal. Where are we with that, Bill?
Right. So that has passed the Senate. And this is, as you said, about $1 trillion, a huge investment in jobs, the biggest probably infrastructure bill, you know, I think in decades, certainly. Highways, tunnels, airports, water systems, broadband, putting a lot of people to work, fixing a lot of crumbling streets and busy transportation hubs, transit. There's money for transit in that. That was part of the president's Build Back Better agenda, the American Jobs Plan. It was sort of grabbed up by a moderate group of Democrats and Republicans, and that's why they call it the bipartisan package. But it was part of Biden's original Build Back Better proposal. That passed the Senate, had 19 Republicans in the Senate vote for it. People were pretty surprised that Republicans would vote for anything that Joe Biden had proposed. The House will vote on it at the end of September. So that's going to become law. I think there's no question that we're going to get that massive infusion of funds for infrastructure. What comes next is a budget resolution, which has the rest of the Biden agenda, because Republicans wouldn't vote for that. Things like paid leave, child care, money for education, green jobs. These are things that get less Republican support. If you put them in a budget resolution, they don't need Republican votes. That's what I was saying earlier. You can't filibuster the budget resolution and reconciliation, which puts it all into law. So that will pass. Also, we hope at the end of September, that's $3.5 trillion. So together, we're talking about $4 trillion or more in spending on jobs, on our families, our communities, infrastructure. This is really historic. You know, putting aside all the back and forth and all the, what goes on in Capitol Hill, which, can be kind of mind-numbing, we're going to, at the end of this year, we're going to get the biggest investment in the middle class since the New Deal, and that's Joe Biden's Build Back Better agenda. This election has huge consequences. We also got, by the way, an NLRB now controlled by the Democrats, and, we're seeing decisions that are hopefully soon that are going to make it easier for workers to organize and bargain.
Well, let's talk about the labor components in this legislation. Let's start off with the bipartisan deal. Are there labor mandates in there?
Well, I mean, there's, these projects are going to be requiring prevailing wages, Davis-Bacon, project labor agreements, registered apprenticeships. The building trades unions and the labor federation worked very hard to make sure that all this new spending is going to come with labor protections and enhanced rights for workers and especially unionized workers. So that will carry through, we think, in the $3.5 trillion bill, which they'll take up next.
Okay. Also, if somebody violates labor law, and we know that a lot of companies do that, and it's kind of a slap on the wrist, there's not much of a fine. It's my understanding that that might be increased as well. What do we know about that, Bill?
That's right. Well, it's less than a slap on the wrist. There are no monetary penalties in the National Labor Relations Act. Companies can violate the law, can violate the act. They can illegally fire a worker. They can engage in all kinds of intimidation and coercion and threats. No financial penalties if they break the law in doing that. We are hoping in this budget reconciliation bill we can get for the first time financial penalties included for those violations. So companies would actually have to pay a price. There'd be real teeth in the National Labor Relations Act. And that, again, if we get that in the budget reconciliation bill, Republicans can't filibuster it. So that's the protection we would need, and we'd be able to pass it with 50 votes. And we are pretty sure we have 50 votes for those provisions. It's not the whole PRO Act. There's a lot of other things in the PRO Act that we want to get done, ending right to work, providing for binding arbitration of first contracts, dealing with the whole gig economy and misclassification. We can't get all that done in budget reconciliation with the protection of those of the rules, but I think we can get penalties, real penalties and real teeth put in the NLRA as part of the budget. So that's a big deal, and we're hoping to get that done when they come back in September.
Okay, so the PRO Act has to be separate legislation. You can't put it in there then, right?
No, not in its entirety. We think there are some provisions that we're going to be able to get in. We're working on that now. It's taken a lot of lawyers, a lot of folks with expertise in parliamentary procedure, but I think we can get some in this budget reconciliation bill.
Okay.
And that can pass without a single Republican vote.
What about raising the minimum wage? I know with the American Rescue Plan, they try to work that in there, and they had to take it out. Is anybody talking about raising it to
$15? Well, folks have not come back to that. It failed in the Senate First, because the parliamentarian said it didn't belong in the rescue plan, which was a budget bill. It was actually using that same procedure I talked about, so it did not require Republicans. But it didn't get every Democrat, so it didn't even get 50. See, this is the problem. We didn't have 50 Democrats willing to support the $15 minimum wage. In fact, I think there were 7 Democrats, maybe as many as 8, who voted against it when it was challenged. So we need to do more work on that. Now, most of those Democrats who voted no said they'd vote for something less than $15. Some said $11, $12, you know. So I think we can raise the minimum wage, but there aren't 10 Republicans. So it would have to be done as part of a reconciliation bill. But then you've got this issue with the parliamentarian saying it doesn't belong in a budget bill. And so we've got 2 hurdles there to overcome.
And there's a lot of people that are of the belief that let the market control the forces. And to that point, I just saw a story that 80%, 4 out of 5 of the restaurants today are paying at or more than $15 an hour, which is significant. And I attribute that to the pandemic, though. And the pandemic is a game changer. And there's a lot of people that worked in various professions for $7-$8 an hour. They're saying, hey, you know what? I'm done with that. I'm moving on. You better raise the pay. And a number of companies are doing that. All right, there's one other issue here I want to get into, and that's trade. Trump negotiated the new NAFTA called the USMCA. And if we can reflect on this is very significant. I touched on this. I'd like to get your perspective on it because this is something. Because in Mexico, a union in Mexico is not like a union in the United States. Let's start right there and talk to me about the what happened with this ruling last week.
Right. Well, traditionally in Mexico, the unions are controlled by the government. It's true in a lot of countries. They don't really have a free trade union movement. You go to work at a plant, and wages and conditions of employment have been set between the government and the employer. They call it a contract, but it's not been freely negotiated. They're called protection agreements because they protect the company from the union. So the USMCA, which Trump began to negotiate, but actually brought back in a fashion that we would never support. Democrats insisted on strengthening it. They finally did, with the help of folks in the Trump administration. So it did, we'll give Trump some credit for that. But he would have passed it without these strong labor provisions. In any case, it passed, and now it's actually taken effect, and it's working. This is part of Rich Trumka's vision. He was sort of the moving force behind this renegotiation of the old NAFTA, now called the USMCA. And now workers actually have a guaranteed vote on representation and contracts. And the first big challenge was a GM plant where there was a protection union. Workers had never voted on the contract, and they just were given that right under the USMCA, and they turned it down. And basically, they're throwing out the protection union, government union, and they're going to bring in an actual free trade union, and they're going to negotiate a new contract. And this is because of the obligation Mexico has to observe international norms. That's what the USMCA said they should do, and that was something that Democrats insisted on, and Trump finally agreed to.
Boy, this is a long time coming. I have to ask you one more question here. Because of what was crafted there, can we see that happening in other trade agreements? We got a lot of trade agreements, Vietnam, Korea, China. What do you think?
That's a really good question. And what we have said, and we've said this to the Biden administration, and I think they agree, the USMCA should be the floor. It's the template for all future negotiations. They may decide to reopen some current agreements, like you said, South Korea and others, and put this same language in there so we make sure there's actual collective bargaining in these countries that we're competing with, so the raises begin, that wages begin to rise in those countries, and we can compete on a more level playing field, which is what we hope happens with Mexico. But the Biden administration, I think, is fully on board with the USMCA being the sort of the template, but really just the beginning. We need to build from there, and I think that's where they are. Although, frankly, right now nobody's talking about trade negotiations. There's too much else on their plate.
Oh yeah,
We kind of need a breather from the trade wars. Hopefully, we won't be talking about that.
I hear you. Build back better with unions. I love it.
Exactly.
All right. That's what it's all about. All right, Bill, we're going to leave it there. You take care. Enjoy the labor. I can't believe Labor Day is just a week and a half away. It's amazing.
Already here.
You stay safe, and I'm sure we're going to be in the thick of things next month. So take care, all right?
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Sue McConnell is with the Better Business Bureau. She's coming up next talking about more scams. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And, of course, you could check us out on Facebook. That's AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number two. Haven't checked in with this lady for a while. Sue McConnell is with the Better Business Bureau. The Cleveland Better Business Bureau. National website is bbb.org. And boy, she's got always more scams to talk about. And number one, there's a lot of tragedy going on and natural disasters. The Haiti earthquake, for one. You got the situation with Afghanistan. And there's a lot of people, especially the greater Cleveland community, is very, very generous when it comes to things like this. But you have to beware. Hey, Sue, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I see the BBB has some guidance on what I just talked about. I'm going to turn it over to you, and maybe you can inform our listeners what's the best way to proceed here if you want to help some people out.
Anytime there are natural disasters or even situations like we have going on in Afghanistan, people have a tendency to want to help in some way. And there are many charitable efforts that follow in the wake of media coverage of events like these. People need to understand that many charities are very legitimate. They'll use your money for the purposes that they plan and promise you that they'll use it for. But there are those sneaky, cagey individuals or groups who will start some sort of charitable effort with no intention other than to take your money for their own purposes. You need to vet charitable efforts very carefully before you donate. BBB has a site called give.org. On this site, you can look up charities and you can find out if they meet our standards for giving. And we ask a charity for several things, such as their audited financial statements. We want to see just what percentage of donations are actually being spent on the programs that the organization claims they are supporting. We also take a look at their fundraising material to be sure that they are being truthful about the programs they're supporting and what they claim your donation is going to be used for. So that's a great site to go to right off the bat to check out the charity. Crowdfunding sites are often difficult to vet and to know whether the individual that is soliciting funds is able to use those funds to help people in need. it's best to give a monetary donation to a well-established organization that has a history of being able to address victims that are caught up in flooding, earthquakes, you know, various terrible situations. You want to look at the organization's website, and a good charitable organization will have right on their website an annual report that shows you exactly what types of programs they've supported in the previous year and information on their financials, who was on their board, good information that you need to know before you decide to give your money. If having a donation be tax deductible is important to you, make certain that the organization is a what's called a 501c3. A 501c3 is a charitable designation that is given by the Internal Revenue Service, and donations to 501c3 organizations are tax deductible. It is really best to give money rather than things like clothing or canned goods for efforts that are happening outside your local area and things that might be happening internationally. It's much better for an organization to have money and be able to spend the money for the purposes that it's needed. If an organization claims to be endorsed by a celebrity, don't just take that on its face. The likenesses and names of celebrities are often used by scammers in not only charitable efforts, but in selling products to lend more credibility to what they're selling or to the charity that you're donating money to. So you don't want to base your donation decision because a well-known celebrity seems to be behind the effort. Check with your state attorney general's office to make sure that charity is registered. Charities do need to register with a state agency, and that's typically the attorney general, in order to be able to have the authority to solicit funds in your state. Now, this doesn't mean that the attorney general's office has vetted the charity or they're endorsing the charity. It just means the charity has at least taken that first step to make sure that they are legally able to solicit funds in your area. So it's a basic bottom line is we do have a need and a willingness to help people that are in a bad situation, but you want to make sure that you are getting that donation to the people who really need it and just not putting it in the pockets of some charity scammer.
Sue, I have one question here. You mentioned the financial statements, and what I want to reflect on is the percentage of the money that the charity collects, how much of that goes to the people in need. Now, I know there's no way it could be 100%, but what should it be? What, do you have any idea on that, any guidance?
You know, you want to see. Now, if it's a brand new organization, they're typically going to have a lot of administrative costs as a startup. But a well-established organization, you should be able to see that 65, 70% or more, they're able to put right back into the programs that they are supporting. That is a detail that you can get from give.org. When you look at a report that we have on a charity, those reports are very comprehensive. They will tell you the organization's purpose. They will tell you information about the fundraising efforts. It will give you our evaluation based on many different standards that we look at to make sure that this charity is trustworthy. It will tell you the percentage of donations spent on programs, the percentage of the donations spent on administrative costs, so that you can make an informed decision.
Very good advice there, Sue. I'm glad you gave us some guidance on that. Let's move to the next scam here, and that's dent repair scammers. You get a fender bender, somebody's going to fix it in a heartbeat. What's the story here, Sue?
This is a fairly new scam that's being reported in various parts of the country. What happens is you go to the grocery store, you go to a mall, someplace where you're going to park your car and you're going to be there for a while. And an individual walks up and says, hey, I see you have a dent or a couple of dents in your car. I happen to work for a body shop, and for a couple hundred bucks cash, I'd be happy to fix that dent for you while you're inside doing your shopping.
Oh, boy.
And the person typically isn't in a company vehicle. They probably don't have on any kind of uniform or identification that indicates they're working at a body shop. But they're offering, they seem very nice. They're offering to fix this for you at a pretty reasonable price while you do your shopping. So you give them some cash and you go into the store. And when you come back out to your car, you see that there is some kind of a wax over where the dent was. It's typically reported as being a blue or a white color wax. And this person who's repaired the dent says, now you need to leave this wax on your car for 3 days. And when you take it off, the dent will be fully repaired.
Oh,
so
no.
You in good faith thank this nice person who did this great favor for you. And 3 days later, you take the wax off and lo and behold, the dent is still there, but the wax isn't anymore because you cleaned that off, but the dent is still there, and you have no way of contacting this individual. Even if they gave you a business card, people are reporting that the phone number is not a legitimate number, or maybe it is for a local body shop, but they don't know who you're talking about or what you're talking about, and you find out that you have been the victim of a dent scammer.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's a new one. Oh, my gosh. Okay, we have time for one more, and this is a pet sitting. People go on vacation. They need someone to watch their pets. What's happening here?
This is a warning for college students primarily who are looking for additional cash. You get contacted by someone who claims that they're going to be moving into your area, and they have a dog. And they need somebody reliable to pet sit or walk the dog while they are at work or, you know, where, whatever their situation is, they claim. And they'll reach out to you through maybe social media or a legitimate job website, or they might even contact you using your student email. And they offer a very decent hourly wage for this, or they might even ask you, you know, what would it cost me to get you to do this for me? And they seem very nice. They tell you all about their pet. They don't need to interview you in person because you seem like the perfect fit. And then they start, the scam begins with them either asking you for personal information like your social security number, or they might want all of your banking info so that they can deposit your wage in advance into your bank account. And in some cases, they send you a check. And the check is to be used for you to deduct in advance some of your wages and also to maybe buy some supplies that they want you to pick up, dog food or a new collar and a leash, something like that. Well, if you've given this person access to your personal information, you could be in line for identity theft issues, which can be very burdensome and difficult to clear up in some cases. And if they've given you a check, that check that you deposited, if you immediately take the funds from that check when the bank makes the funds available, you'll be later notified by your bank that once it actually cleared the banking system, it was determined that this check was counterfeit and you'll need to return any money back to the bank that you took from this check. So if somebody ever sends you a check in advance for a job that you're going to do and the check is written on some business's bank account in Texas or someplace, don't cash that check right away. Let it sit there for 30 days before, so it has time to actually clear and the bank knows that the funds are actually available. This is a typical ruse that is used. We've talked about a lot of different job scams, and many of them do target young people who are looking for some part-time additional job or additional cash. And our research has shown over the years that younger people, 18 to 24-ish, are much more likely to be scammed because they are doing so many things online and they are not taking time to really research these offers. And they might not even be aware that some of these scams exist. Phony job offers run the gamut. We've seen many, many kinds. The pet sitting is a new one that we've seen. And again, it's really targeting college students more than anybody else.
More good advice from the Better Business Bureau. BBB.org is a website. Sue, always a pleasure. You take care. Enjoy your upcoming Labor Day holiday weekend. We'll be talking down the road, all right?
Will do. Thank you.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, working class perspectives and the steelworkers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.